The Culture Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Vakatra AI. Welcome back to the Dup Dive. So today we are tackling a subject that sometimes feels a bit intimidating, philosophy.
Yeah, it can definitely seem that way. But we're going in with a guide, a really fantastic book, Will Durant's The Story of Philosophy. It makes it all feel so much more accessible.
Accessible, exactly. And dramatic, even.
Yeah.
It frames the whole history of Western thought as this deeply human and honestly exciting story.
It really is. I think this book is almost like essential reading if you want a quick way to get informed about the big ideas. Durant takes these huge concepts, you know, existence, ethics, how society should work.
Things that feel locked up in academia.
Right. And he shows how they're actually a practical toolkit, things you can use for, well, for living.
So our mission for you, the learner, is to give you a clear map, a roadmap of these foundational ideas that really build Western civilization. And Durant's core idea is just brilliant, isn't it?
It is. He says, basically, to understand the ideas, you first need to understand the lives of the thinkers.
Yeah.
The people behind them.
It's about their struggles, their times, what drove them.
And that's the shortcut. It's why the book works so well. It's not just history class. The real purpose is getting at that wisdom of the ages.
Giving us maybe a richer way to look at our own problems today.
Precisely. A better toolkit for navigating, you know, all the complexity we face now.
Okay, so let's talk about Will Durant himself. Who was this guy? Lived a long time, 1885 to 1981.
Mm-hmm. And most people probably know him and his wife, Ariel, for that absolute massive work, The Story of Civilization. Like 11 volumes. Huge undertaking.
Wow. But he had the philosophy chops too, right? A PhD from Columbia.
He did. But what makes this story of philosophy so special, I think, is where it came from. It wasn't born in some university seminar.
Yeah, where then?
It actually started as a series of lectures he gave in New York. And get this, the audience was working class adults.
Okay, that changes the perspective entirely.
Right. It means the whole project from the start was about making these complex ideas clear and useful for regular people.
So he wasn't trying to be the next Plato, building some grand new system.
Not at all. He was more of a master synthesizer, a brilliant storyteller, really. He believed philosophy wasn't just for academics, it belonged to everyone.
A humanizer of these intellectual giants.
That's a great way to put it. His real skill was weaving together the biography, the history, the actual ideas.
So you don't just get Plato's theory of forms in a vacuum.
Exactly. You get the context, Socrates being executed, the political chaos in Athens, and you understand why Plato was searching so desperately for something certain, something permanent. It makes the ideas come alive.
Okay, so let's dive into the book itself then. The main idea, the premise, is philosophy as a journey through time.
Yeah, a chronological story. He calls it a great conversation that stretches across centuries. It really feels like an epic narrative.
And who's it for? Who did he have in mind writing it?
Well, based on those lectures, it seems aimed squarely at the curious person. You know, anyone who wonders about the big questions, life, meaning right and wrong, society, but maybe feels a bit overwhelmed by traditional philosophy texts.
Durant is like the friendly, knowledgeable guy taking you through it all.
Exactly. It turns something potentially daunting into something, well, inspiring.
And the scope is pretty vast. Where does he start us off?
We begin, naturally, in ancient Athens.
Mm-hmm.
The big three. Socrates, Plato, Aristotle. That's the explosion point.
And then it flows onwards.
Seamlessly. Through figures like Francis Bacon, who championed the scientific method, then Spinoza's really radical rationalism.
Voltaire's sharp wit during the Enlightenment, Kant's attempt to synthesize everything.
Right, and he takes us all the way into the 19th and 20th centuries. Thinkers like Schopenhauer and especially Nietzsche, who are grappling with modernity's big crises.
And finishing with the American pragmatists, people like William James.
Yeah, James, John Dewey, focusing on the practical application of ideas. What works?
It's amazing how he connects their personal lives to their big ideas. You mentioned Spinoza grinding lenses, kind of an exile.
Yeah, or Nietzsche hiking in the Alps, searching for clarity. Durant shows you these weren't just abstract thoughts cooked up in an office.
They came out of real lives, real struggles, real passions.
Exactly. So reading the philosophy becomes like reading these incredible personal histories. It changes how you engage with the ideas.
Okay, let's jump into that conversation then, starting with the ancients, as Durant does. Socrates first. The guy who famously wrote nothing down.
Right. But completely shifted philosophy's focus. Moved it away from just studying the stars and the cosmos.
And towards what?
Towards the human soul. Towards ethics. How should we live? That became the central question.
And his method, the Socratic method.
His great gift, really, that relentless, disciplined questioning designed to poke holes in your assumptions, force you to examine what you think you know, and hopefully get closer to truth.
Durant really highlights his trial and death, doesn't he? Choosing death over silence.
He frames it as intellectual martyrdom, the ultimate example of prioritizing reason and integrity over everything else. It's incredibly dramatic.
And that sets the stage perfectly for his most famous student, Plato,
who was apparently deeply affected, haunted even, by Socrates' death. That experience seems to fuel his search for something stable, something unchanging.
Which leads him to the theory of forms. Can we break that down simply? It feels lofty.
It is a bit lofty. But the core idea, basically, is that the world we see and touch, the physical world, is messy, changing, imperfect. It's like a shadow.
Or a copy.
Exactly. A mere copy of a higher, true reality. A world of perfect, eternal forms, like the perfect form of justice or beauty or goodness itself.
Okay, so how do we get access to that world?
Ah, well, that's where his famous allegory of the cave comes in. Such a powerful metaphor.
Explain that one.
Okay, imagine people chained in a cave their whole lives, facing a wall. Behind them, there's a fire, and things pass in front of it, casting shadows on the wall.
So the shadows are all they ever see.
Right. That's their reality, the world of sensory experience, illusions. But the philosopher is the one who manages to break free, turn around, leave the cave, and see the real world lit by the sun.
The sun representing true knowledge, the forms?
Precisely. It's the whole philosophical journey from illusion to enlightenment in one story. It's brilliant.
So Plato's looking up towards these perfect forms. But then his own star student, Aristotle, comes along and pulls things back down to earth.
That's a perfect way to put it. Aristotle is the great realist. Immense respect for Plato, his teacher. But he became his greatest critic in many ways.
How so?
He shifted the focus back to the tangible, the observable world, the here and now. He was arguably the first great scientific thinker trying to systematize knowledge about this world.
And he invented formal logic, the syllogism.
He did, which is, I mean, the basic structure for making a logical argument. If A is B and B is C, then A is C. That's Aristotle, laying the foundation.
But for everyday life, maybe the most useful thing is his ethics, the golden mean.
Oh, absolutely. From his Nicomachean Ethics. He argued the goal of life is eudaimonia, often translated as flourishing or living well.
And how do you achieve that flourishing?
Through virtue. But virtue for Aristotle isn't some abstract ideal. It's practical. It's the midpoint between two extremes, vices of excess and deficiency.
Okay, give an example.
Sure. Take courage. The excess is recklessness, just rushing in foolishly. The deficiency is cowardice, being paralyzed by fear. Courage is the mean, the sweet spot in the middle.
Finding the right balance.
Exactly. And it's not something you find once. It's something you practice constantly. It's about calibration in daily life. Incredibly practical.
Okay, from finding the mean in ethics, let's jump forward. Francis Bacon, the scientific method guy.
Right. Bacon looked back at centuries of philosophy, especially the medieval scholasticism, and felt it had become sterile. Too much arguing based on ancient texts and pure deduction.
What's deduction again?
Starting with a general principle or theory and figuring out specific examples. Bacon said, let's flip that. Let's use induction.
Which means?
Start with observations. Look at the world, gather specific facts, collect data, and then work your way up to forming general principles or laws based on that evidence.
That sounds like modern science.
It is the foundation of the modern scientific method. Observe first. Then theorize.
And he also gave us something really useful for just thinking clearly, right? The idols of the mind.
Yes. A fantastic tool for critical thinking. He identified four types of biases or idols that distort our reason, things we need to watch out for.
Like what?
Well, there are the idols of the tribe, biases common to all humans, like seeing patterns where none exist. Then idols of the cave, our own personal prejudices, blind spots based on our upbringing or experiences.
Okay, I can see those. What else?
Idols of the marketplace. This is a good one, how language itself can mislead us. Using jargon or poorly defined words can make us think we understand something when we don't.
That happens all the time.
And finally, idols of the theater biases from established systems of thought or philosophies that we accept uncritically, like watching a play.
It's like a precognitive bias checklist, centuries early.
Totally. A timeless guide to spotting flawed thinking. And it all served his main belief. Knowledge is power. Understanding the world through evidence gives us mastery over it.
Okay, next up, Spinoza. Quite a character, apparently. excommunicated, grinding lenses for a living.
Yeah, a fascinating life in 17th century Holland. And his philosophy was just as radical. He developed this idea of, well, pantheism, essentially.
Meaning God is everything.
Pretty much. Dualism of nature, God, or nature. For Spinoza, they were the same thing. One single infinite substance that is reality. And everything that happens within that substance follows necessary deterministic laws.
Whoa, hold on. Deterministic. So no free will, everything is predetermined.
That's the huge challenging part of Spinoza. Yes, his universe is deterministic. Everything happens out of necessity, following the laws of nature or God.
So how can we be free? Isn't that just fatalism? Like, what's the point?
It's a great question. Spinoza's answer is subtle. True freedom, for him, isn't about having unlimited choices or being able to break the laws of nature. That's impossible.
Okay, so what is freedom then?
Freedom is understanding. It's recognizing the necessity of things. When you understand the causes of why things are the way they are, including your own emotions and actions, you are no longer a slave to your passions, your anger, fear, desires.
So understanding brings peace.
Exactly. Reason allows you to accept reality, to understand your place within the whole system of nature. That understanding is freedom, bringing tranquility and overcoming emotional bondage. It's a very stoic kind of freedom.
Okay, moving into the Enlightenment, Voltaire. The name just sounds sharp.
He was sharp, probably the dominant intellectual figure of his age, a master of satire and wit. He used his pen like a weapon.
Fighting against what?
Tyranny, intolerance, superstition, religious dogma. He was a fierce advocate for reason, freedom of speech, and separation of church and state.
His famous slogan?
Écraser l'infâme. Crush the infamous thing. He meant crushing intolerance and fanaticism wherever he saw it. He showed philosophy could be a powerful force for social and political change.
And then we get Kant, often seen as the great synthesizer, right? Trying to resolve the big philosophical debates.
That's right. The huge debate was between the rationalists, who thought reason alone was the source of knowledge, and the empiricists, who thought all knowledge came from sensory experience.
Where did Kant land?
He basically said they were both partly right and partly wrong. He caused what's called his Copernican Revolution in philosophy.
Like Copernicus changing our view of the solar system, what did Kant flip?
He flipped the relationship between the mind and reality. Instead of the mind just passively receiving information from the world, like the empiricists thought, Kant argued the mind actively structures our experience.
How does it structure it?
Through inherent categories like space, time, and causality. Think of them like built-in software or inescapable lenses we view the world through.
So we can't know the world as it really is?
Exactly. We can only know the world as it appears to us, the phenomenon, after it's been filtered and organized by our mind structures. The thing in itself, the noumenon, remains unknowable. It's a profound limit on human knowledge.
Wow. And ethically, he gave us the categorical imperative.
The supreme principle of morality for him. The famous formulation is, act only according to that maxim whereby you can, at the same time, will that it should become a universal law.
Meaning?
Basically, before you act, ask yourself, what if everyone did this? Would it create a world I'd want to live in? If the principle behind your action could be applied universally without contradiction, then it's moral. If not, it's unethical. A very demanding standard.
Okay, final stretch. The 19th century. Nietzsche, another intense figure.
Hugely influential and often misunderstood. Durant covers his diagnosis of modernity, the famous death of God.
Which doesn't literally mean God ceased to exist for him, right?
No, not necessarily atheism in the simple sense. It meant the idea of God as the foundation for Western morality, meaning, and value was crumbling. The traditional pillars were collapsing.
Leaving? What?
Potentially nihilism. A sense of meaninglessness, pointlessness, everything is permitted. Nietzsche saw this as a huge danger, but also an opportunity.
An opportunity for what?
For humans to move beyond the old constraints. His answer involves the will to power.
Which is? Not just political power, I assume.
No. It's more fundamental. A basic life drive to grow, expand, overcome obstacles, strive, create, dominate, in the sense of self-mastery.
And this leads to the Übermensch, the Overman.
Yes. The Übermensch, or Overman, is the goal. It's the type of person who recognizes the death of God, rejects old slave morality, creates their own values, and affirms life completely.
Even the suffering.
Especially the suffering. Embracing hardship, even the idea of eternal recurrence, living your life as if you'd have to live it exactly the same way over and over forever. Can you say yes to that? The Übermensch can.
That's a lot. And Durant ends with American pragmatism.
Yeah, thinkers like William James and John Dewey. A very different flavor. Much more grounded, practical.
What was their main idea?
Basically, the meaning or truth of an idea lies in its practical consequences, its cash value, as James memorably put it. Does it work? Does it make a difference in experience?
So philosophy becomes less about ultimate reality and more about problem solving.
In a way, yes. Focused on application, on democracy, education, improving society. A very American take on philosophy, you could say.
Wow. What a journey through centuries of thought. Okay, let's try to boil it down. What are some key themes or messages that Durant really hammers home?
Well, first, definitely the idea of philosophy as the great conversation. It's not just a series of pronouncements from isolated geniuses.
It's a dialogue.
Exactly. Ideas evolve through critique, response, refinement. Aristotle reacts to Plato. Kant synthesizes rationalism and empiricism. Nietzsche reacts to the whole tradition.
And the takeaway for us today, why does that matter?
It teaches us that progress, intellectual or otherwise, is usually iterative, not instant. Understanding our current issues, political divides, ethical dilemmas often means understanding how we got here, seeing the echoes of past debates. It encourages a bit of humility, maybe.
Good point. What's another key theme?
The practical consequences of ideas. Durant really shows that these philosophical concepts aren't just mental gymnastics. They have real-world impact.
Like how?
Well, Voltaire's ideas absolutely fueled revolutionary sentiments. Bacon's method led directly to the scientific revolution. Later, thinkers like Herbert Spencer used evolutionary ideas to justify certain economic systems, for better or worse.
So ideas shape society. We need to be mindful of the ideas we adopt.
Definitely. It reminds you that philosophy isn't just an ivory tower thing. It actively builds the world we live in, makes you think more intentionally about the ideas circulating today.
Okay, a third one.
I'd say the ongoing search for a rational basis for life. Underneath all the different systems and answers, there's this persistent human attempt to ground our lives, our ethics, our politics, our knowledge and reason, rather than just accepting tradition or dogma unquestioningly.
From Socrates asking, what is justice? To Kant seeking a universal moral law.
Right. It's that core drive to justify our beliefs and actions through logical thought and evidence. That's basically the heart of critical thinking, isn't it? A skill we desperately need today.
Absolutely. Okay, Durant's book is also full of memorable lines. Let's share a few key quotes or condensed ideas that really stand out.
We almost have to start with Socrates, via Plato. The unexamined life is not worth living.
Classic. What's the core message there for you?
It's just a fundamental call to self-awareness.
Yeah.
To use that unique human capacity, reason, to actually question ourselves, our beliefs, our actions. If you're just drifting through without thinking, are you truly living?
Powerful. How about Aristotle?
I love this one, often attributed to him. We are what we repeatedly do. Excellence, then, is not an act, but a habit.
That sounds incredibly modern, like current habit science.
Totally. It says character isn't built in one grand gesture. It's forged in the small, consistent actions you take every single day. Virtue is a practice.
Okay, Spinoza. He seemed focused on understanding.
Yes, this captures his approach beautifully. I have made a ceaseless effort not to ridicule, not to bewail, not to scorn human actions, but to understand them.
So less judgment, more analysis.
Exactly. The goal is to understand the causes behind things, including human behavior. That understanding leads to acceptance, tranquility, freedom from being jerked around by your emotions. See the necessity, find the calm.
And finally, Nietzsche, something challenging.
Has to be. What does not kill me makes me stronger.
More than just a cliche, you think?
For Nietzsche, absolutely. It's not just about bouncing back. It's the idea that hardship, suffering, overcoming resistance, these are necessary for growth. They are opportunities to exercise that will to power, to become more, to affirm life in its totality, challenges and all.
These really are like mental tools you can carry around. So let's get practical. How can someone listening apply some of these ideas right now?
Okay, critical thinking tool. Try using the Socratic method on yourself or in discussions. When faced with a claim or an opinion, ask, what are the underlying assumptions here? Or what's the evidence for that? Really push beyond the surface level. Super useful for evaluating news, ads, even just everyday conversations.
Good one. What about personal growth?
Take Aristotle's golden mean to heart. Want to build a virtue like discipline or generosity. Don't aim for some huge dramatic change overnight. Focus on the small, consistent daily actions. Find the mean. Build the habit, like Aristotle said. Excellence is a habit.
And dealing with our own biases. Bacon's idols.
Yes. Use them as a checklist before making important decisions. Ask yourself, am I letting my personal feelings cloud my judgment? Idols of the Cave? Am I being swayed by fancy language or groupthink? Idols of the Marketplace or Tribe? Just being aware of the potential bias is a huge first step.
How about managing tough emotions? Spinoza's idea.
Right. If you're feeling really anxious or angry, try to shift from judging the feeling, this is bad, I shouldn't feel this way, to understanding its causes. Why am I feeling this? What triggered this?
Right.
Exploring the causes, like Spinoza suggested, can bring a sense of detachment and calm, more acceptance.
Those are really practical. Okay, as we wrap up, what's one thing that really struck you revisiting Durant's story of philosophy?
You know, what always gets me is how personal and, yeah, dramatic this story is. These weren't dusty academics in quiet libraries all the time. These were passionate people, often facing real danger or exile, wrestling with the biggest questions imaginable. Durant makes you feel that human struggle. It transforms the subject.
Yeah, it takes it from potentially dry and intimidating to this grand human epic. For me, the lasting insight is that idea, like the great conversation, realizing that we're all, whether we know it or not, part of this ongoing dialogue that stretches back thousands of years.
We inherit the questions and the attempted answers.
Exactly. And understanding that history, even just a little, gives us better tools, I think, to think clearly about our own lives, our own society, our own future. It reminds us that just asking why, like Socrates did, is maybe one of the most powerful, most human things we can do.
Well said. It encourages you to keep asking.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.